Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Saturn Vox podcast, where discussions of philosophy meet the liminal space we weave in dreams. This is your host and liberation dreamweaver, Mikala Ann. This week, we are welcoming astrologer, bruja, and world builder Ari Felix onto the pod for the season 3 premiere. I am thrilled to release this episode, which was a conversation filled with immense contemplative wisdom. We talk about Ari's work in the field of worldbuilding and its role as an anti-capitalist pedagogy for the liberation of self, an exercise in dreaming our reality as we, the sovereign of our own lives, will it to be. How do we connect ourselves to the life-giving blood force of our own generative creativity, both through lineage and through the lens of our own agency? What types of healing can be cultivated societally when we stop viewing things through the lens of good, bad, and instead focus on ease, disease? All this and more on today's episode of Saturn Vox. This podcast is brought in part by listeners like you. If you want to support the show and its humble host, hop on over to the Patreon at www.patreon.com/SaturnVox, where you can listen to extended episode content and join in on our community Discord server.
Hi, everyone. Hi, thank you for the invitation. I am Ari Felix. I'm a writer, an astrologer, and a world-building coach.
So that is a very interesting word, world-building coach. I've never heard anybody bring that, you know, term up or use it before. Could you give us more of an in-depth explanation on what that means to you?
Yeah, so world building, as you'll typically find it, refers to like sci-fi or fantasy world creation and fiction. And so I'm not that familiar with that world, but for some reason, the word just popped into my head last summer as like a really good description for what I want to support people to do and what I do. And so when I talk about world building and call myself a world building coach, I'm talking about being someone who is facilitating people in, you know, what is more commonly called creating their reality or engaging with reality creation or, you know, becoming the author of their own life. You know, there's so many like more mainstream words or phrases for it. But I like world building because it's playful and it has this like combination of playfulness and gravitas that I really like.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is it's a technique in order to get someone to take agency of their life and then build whatever reality they are like looking to receive in that world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't like looked at it as a technique, though I'm sure there are many techniques in it that I use just from my like decade plus of experience working with people as a counseling astrologer and as a bruja. But it's more of an approach and a context, I think, you know, and there's something, it is very personal. It is a very much about personal sovereignty and individual spiritual sovereignty that allows for the relationship with reality and with natural law and with the world that is constructive and productive and generative and free. And it also gestures towards the more collective concepts as well. You know, creating a world is like, it is your own reality, but also how that reality intersects with other people's realities. Which, you know, on the premise of all realities being real.
Yes, so that's very is in line with like the occult idea of, oh, we're all kings in a shared kingdom. So how do I wield the as you said, sovereignty that I exert into the world in a cohabitational way with the other?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I find it very interesting that you said that you don't have specific techniques for how world building works. So is the implication there that it's nuanced per each person and it's something you explore maybe through things that you learned as an astrologer and a bruja?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really like creating formulas. And I don't find that they're very productive in actual one-on-one work. So I like frameworks because I feel like frameworks give people a way of thinking about things. So world building is very paradigmatic to me. It's thinking about how we think about things. It's taking that, you know, kind of zoomed out perspective, which is why I think of it as more of an approach. And in session or in, you know, groups, whatever I'm doing, it is very much about direct within that framework of world building, you know, and taking your place as like a sovereign being in your own life and in the world. Within that framework, directing each individual's attention and inquiry towards themselves, right? And because I think that's the muscle that's the least flexed in, you know, dominant culture or just in the timeline that we're in right now as a species. It's the most flexed by people who have an agenda that doesn't necessarily include the well-being of all. And it's the least flexed by people who consider themselves to be participating in the creating of a new world, a new reality. And so I really want people to learn how to think critically, but not just in a like a, you know, scientific or academic sense, but in a spiritual and energetic sense as well.
Oh, I adore this. So you're not like giving people a formula. You're basically guiding them through the process of coming to an understanding of what that formula looks like for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's extremely crucial to me because I, you know, everyone is in their own context and in their own world, you know, which is obviously what world building gestures towards as well. And so to assume that there could be a one size fits all formula or technique is to assume a kind of like homogenization of how reality creation or manifesting or world building works. And that's not really my thing.
Yeah, it would be removing people's agency to try to force them to fit into a formula that doesn't authentically fit them anyway. It would be counterproductive to what you're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So if there is no technique, how would a general like session of world build coaching like present itself? Do they change from person to person, or is there some sort of guidance that you follow?
I generally start with a question in like my general session. I have like different kinds of sessions. My general session, I start with the question of like, what is the dream reality you're longing to create? And like from that person's expression, you know, I can respond with pointing out what tensions between where they are now and how they feel now and how they're identifying now and where they would like to be. And so a lot of it is really playing with tension. A lot of it is untangling tension. And, you know, tension is creative energy. All tension is creative tension. And so really kind of diving into that and dissolving the illusion between the, you know, their perception of themselves in the current moment and their what I call the dream self, which is like, you know, how they want to be embodied, how they want to be feeling, how they want to be relating to life. And so I start with that question. And then from there, you know, we really enter this open conversation. Like that's very important to me and always has been since the beginning of my practice is really just allow each engagement to be an open conversation. I don't like to talk at people, you know, because I feel like I'm trying to support the creation of something. And so it has to be collaborative. And so, yeah, it's kind of a mysterious. I don't know how each session is going to go because I don't know that individual, you know, and what energetic field they're bringing with them, what ancestors they're bringing with them, what context they're bringing with them into the session. And so it gets to be different every time, which is really fun and part of what I love about it. And everybody's dream is different, you know, the world that everyone wants to build is different. You know, and so allowing for that differentiation is super important, you know, and allowing for there to be a connection to a collective dream, but not a prioritization of the collective dream is something that I like playing with, you know, based on the premise that your personal sovereignty and freedom and love and creativity is automatically beneficial to everyone. So there's no need to try to make it heroic or make it a contribution or make it, you know, bigger. So yeah, in session, it's really kind of like, it's energetic strategy work is what it is. You know, that's what it really is. It's like getting in there, reading the energy, playing with the energy, moving the energy, so that it can flow in the direction that that individual wants it to flow, you know, whether that's towards purpose or whether that's towards the desire that they have in this season, you know, whatever the scale is. I'm really just working with getting people connected to their world creating energy so that they can like actually use it.
Yeah, I love what you said too about how anybody's dream is like already a perfect contribution to the co-creation. And that we don't have to have like a mask over how big or how small the dream is. It sounds like there's a lot of work that you must do, you know, potentially a session is around like grief carrying, potentially a session is around shame carrying. So it's also kind of like you're wearing a lot of different hats, and depending on which dream world you enter, you have to become a different kind of character to help, you know, the creator of that dream move along.
Yeah, exactly. I love that analogy. It's never occurred to me. But yeah, it is exactly like that. Like I'm dropping into a game in a world that I'm not familiar with and that I don't know. And I'm just a helper, you know, kind of like in actual video games or stuff like that, where there's like that helper character that appears and like, you know, can give you some cryptic advice.
Yes.
And there's something else that you said that I really liked, but yeah, each individual's, you know, I'm trying to like avoid cliche words here, but each individual's expression is crucial and necessary. It's kind of like supporting people and relaxing into the organic, effortless beauty and perfection of how reality works and how energy works and how like path finding works, you know. There isn't, you know, I think because of capitalism, there's these ideas that we have to be trying hard at everything. Everything has to be trying hard, you know, like, but I'm interested in a world building ethos that isn't equivalent to how strong is your work ethic, mm-hmm. you know, like it really is so much about relaxing. And you're right about the grief and the shame. That's definitely part of it. And I have a background in trauma literacy and grief literacy and shame literacy. So that definitely comes in handy. But what I have found fascinating actually is that, you know, I pivoted from focusing on like astrology for apocalypse and helping people who are like really in a hard place. And that's where a lot of tool gathering for navigating shame and grief, you know, came into my life. But what I found most fascinating in pivoting from that to world building and creation and dreaming is that people just need to be given permission oftentimes to like do that relaxing that I was talking about and to just like, it sounds reductive, but be themselves, you know, and trust themselves. So there is obviously, of course, going to be grief and shame in some areas, you know, different for each person. But I don't find that coming up as much as when I was focusing on like apocalypse, you know, and focusing on what's hard, what's difficult and what's challenging. You know, we are ultimately just children who, you know, got taller. And so it's not very difficult, at least for people who are consenting to work with me already. You know, they already are willing enough to enter that space. It's not as tearing the Band-Aid off to, as one might imagine, to enter into a space of claiming or reclaiming your spiritual freedom. Because I think that in my cosmology, that's a home frequency for everyone. And so that's what I mean about dissolving the illusion between like this quote unquote self and the dream self. You know, it's like all separation is illusion. And once you can kind of like cut through that, people don't even need to go through, you know, some of the like unnecessary suffering mm-hmm. habits that we've accumulated through living with oppression, you know?
Oh my goodness. So many juicy things that you just said just now. Yeah, I'm very interested in how you were mentioning within your cosmology, each person's dream self is, of course, the vibrational perfection of what they're striving to be. There's like ideas that I play with that in Kabbalah as well, that like whatever my aspect of the soul, of the all being, drives me to hunger for is, of course, a perfected embodiment of both my authentic self and in worship of the all being. But could you explain from your cosmology's perspective how that works and give us some background on how like your magic and theology fills up this practice as well?
Yeah, sure. I'll do my best. I come from kind of a soup pot, or a sancocho, as we call it, you know, in Puerto Rican culture, of different theology and ideologies. And, you know, I grew up in different religions growing up. And, you know, and I, in the last half decade, I've really been learning a lot from Ifa, which is like a Yoruba tradition, and their relationship, that tradition's relationship and concepts to natural law, which is an ancestral connection for me. And so, you know, the natural law is, you know, I feel like it sounds so hardcore and so intense, but it really is what you're saying, which is that there is a design in everything. I mean, we see this with nature, you know, like when in studying nature, even just watching, you know, Nature Channel, whatever it is, you're like, wow, there's just this awe that you get filled up with, realizing how is this so perfect? How, you know, like how are this bouquet of peonies like just unfolding so beautifully, and how is every petal like different, but you know, so perfect? It's like, it's that. And I think it's interesting because I feel like the way that I view like the dream self and reality and all of that is so tied into different threads that I experienced, like, you know, in Judaism and in like Pentecostal Christianity, about this kind of like the way that it shows up there is a very like trust God type of thing, you know, like that's another way of saying like trust the perfection of natural law and like how everything unfolds. And so it definitely connects to that. And I think also it's like, for me, it's like minus the suffering, you know, and I think like it's complex, of course, in terms of like suffering is part of the natural law. Suffering is part of the way that things are and unfold. And being, allowing yourself to increase your capacity to hold the reality of suffering and also the reality of non-dualism, and allow for a kind of like bigger pool where, yes, there is suffering and there's also perfection and beauty, you know. And I think that often we're conditioned with this very either or binary kind of thinking that's like, okay, if we're going to acknowledge suffering, then we have to really look in that direction all the time, you know. And that's what a lot of like political movement is oriented towards, not so much mainstream, but like a few tiers below that, and also religion, you know, like some religions are very focused on that. And so for me, it's kind of hard to even articulate because it's such a heart space thing for me. Like, it's just, it feels very like, that's what I'm here to do, is kind of like bring some of that innocence and bring some of that beauty and that like perspective of the perfection of reality back, you know, like collaborate with nature, collaborate with natural law to encourage myself and those who want to join me in looking in that direction. And so that's kind of the like reality foundation that I operate from in my work, you know. It's just like, it's an all-inclusive framework, you know. It's not like, it's not it, like I said earlier, all realities are real. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not like, no, don't say that, or don't think that, don't look at that, that's not, you know, you should look over here. It's not that thing. It's like, yes and, you know, which is very like a phrase from like improv comedy groups, you know. Yes and that's how I see life, is kind of like an improv comedy. You know, maybe that's like the dark humor Jew in me, but that's like, yeah, I don't know if that answers your question, but.
No, it definitely did. I adored that. I think, you know, there's something really that brings up what you were saying earlier about the tension. There's like this tension, the suffering, but don't idealize the suffering, don't over identify with the suffering, like allow suffering to be in flow. Yes, and what do you also desire? Because of course there is something to be said in so far as you must grow through tribulations or whatever, but also the question becomes, to what extent and how much do we over-identify with that narrative because it's the one sold to us? And that is a deeply anti-capitalist question of like, why can we not just have our cake and eat it too? Why can life not be fair? Can you, and this is world building, can I not rewrite that narrative, right? Mm-hmm. So I love that because, you know, it is oftentimes what I hear from people who are very afraid of letting go of capital, is this people won't work if they don't have incentive. And mm-hmm. that is like one of those, you know, narratives that, or the narrative. So like people think, if I don't have the suffering, if I don't have the pressure, then I just won't do anything. But they forget that like, no, you will get bored and you'll have nothing to do with your free time, but what actually makes you happy. And then you'll find that you're actually creating something beautiful in any given moment. So I don't know. It's very lovely what you're saying. My only question then becomes, in what ways, because as we daydream of an anti-capitalist society, and I do think that we all should, and we should all actively participate in world building of that kind, in your sessions, like, how do you account for the fact that there are certain obstacles because of societal implications that might come up against the world that the sovereign individual is trying to create?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's really about, you know, like you said, it sounds lovely, but this is actually a very existential playing field here, mm-hmm, right? Because the bottom line question is, what is the purpose of life? If work and suffering isn't what gives life meaning, you know, isn't all that gives life meaning, what is the purpose of life? And, you know, my theory and the theory of, you know, so many people before me is that, as Ram Dass says, be here now. Right? The purpose is presence. It's everything emerges from presence. Everything does, you know? And so how can that dream reality of, like, in your example, anti-capitalism, be brought into the now moment, mm-hmm. you know? So for someone who is working three jobs, you know, which used to be me, how can I be less judgmental towards myself every day? or like, how do we scale it? Like, I have this teaching, How to Build Your Dream World 1.0. And the number one step is start small. Right. And I feel like so many of us are frozen in, okay, anti-capitalism isn't real right now. We need to, like you said, account for the current reality. And I see accounting for the current reality as one very small step in a sequence of steps that you must begin to take if you really are committed to that dream, you know? And so starting small and allowing it to be scaled down and like, okay, maybe you can't quit one of your three jobs right now, but how can you be kinder to yourself? How can you choose rest when you can? Like, it's actually very pragmatic and practical. You know, like, what's actually available to you in the mm-hmm. now moment? And how do you bring the sensation? Like, what is underneath the desire to be anti-capitalist, as if one individual could be the identity of a praxis? Like, how can you what is the desire that's underneath that, right? And the desire that's underneath that is a sensation. It's a desire to feel the sensation of freedom, joy, relaxation, connection, whatever it is. So how can you invite more of that and choose more of that and look in the direction of that more in your everyday life? And that's where that sovereignty and responsibility comes in, because if you're waiting for the world to change, for you to change the world, then you're going to be waiting forever. And it's in those small fractal decisions that, you know, and the kind of like accumulation of them among us that changes the energetic field, you know. And that's mm-hmm. what I mean by it's energetic strategy work, because it really is about, it's not about looking in the direction of this, you know, quote unquote, concrete, realistic, what's actually happening reality, because all of this shit was made up by white men, you know. And so like, when you really think about it, it would be confusing to just reinforce that, you know, by only positioning yourself in opposition to it. You know, like whatever mm-hmm. you're constantly positioning yourself in opposition to, you're reinforcing, right? You need to like actually build something else. You need to like create the alternative. And so most I've found, in at least in my work and like the medicine that I carry, when that kind of tension comes up against, you know, the hierarchical reality of the intersecting systems of oppression and how that individual is positioned within them, I found that getting into the ancestral story is where that person can find healing and freedom from over-identifying with this world, this reality that whiteness has created. And then they can feel some of that, that, you know, some of like that grief can move and they can feel more ease of connection to their sovereignty. And so you can be in the game without having to identify with the creators of the game.
Yeah.
Right. And you can be in the reality without having to, you know, identify with it. Even identifying in only in opposition to it is identifying with it, because you're just like, this is real and this is wrong. This is real and this is wrong. And like, okay, great. That's like an important part of the process. And then what?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so the last thing I would add to that is like, as someone who comes from, you know, like if there were like a list of fucking oppressions or marginalized identities, whatever we're calling it nowadays, that you had to like check off, like I would check off so many fucking boxes on that list, you know? So it's like, it's not a stretch of my imagination to position myself in a context of feeling the impacts of oppression. You know what I mean? Like that context has made up like my life, you know? And so I'm deeply familiar with how whiteness works, with how capitalism works, with how, you know, sexism works, with how homophobia works, with how ableism works. Like I am a participant, a reciprocant of those, the oppression that comes from, you know, denying those realities, right? If that makes sense. Like, I am, because of the lineage I was born into and the skin I was born into and the sexuality I was born into and the gender I was born into, am already like a target of the state,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that is actually a sweet spot to be, because I know that it's kind of like, I know that how I made my way out of all of that, right, in terms of like how I changed my relationship to it, right? Not how I like conquered it and now, you know, I'm free of the world, right? But like how I changed my relationship to it. So I know that it's possible. And I think if to speak to people that hold my identities, if Black, Brown, and Indigenous people, if gay people, if disabled people are just waiting for, you know, the hierarchy to acknowledge us and to validate us and to give us the permission to fight for our own freedom or give us the permission to embody our world building power, then we'll be waiting for fucking ever. And every single efficient movement, political movement that has made any actual change or results or ripples was because the people who were leading those movements emphasized 100% personal responsibility and power.
Mm-hmm.
People power is based on each person being connected to the fact that they do have power. And so that's kind of like the political context of my work. And I come from a very political background. And so it deeply informs how I move in session and how I help people to move beyond it as well, right? Which is like, it's not about being separate from it, but kind of like, I don't know, kind of like a tree or a plant will grow anyway, you know, and will kind of like take over the building anyway.
Yeah.
Like that kind of moving beyond it.
I love this. So the idea the answer to my original question then became like, as we talk to ourselves with a different story and tell ourselves in each moment, I can create a better world, or I can stop repeating these narratives that hold myself down and my peers down and my community down, then we make small ripples of change in the energetic fabric where like I'm no longer perpetuating toxic ideology into the world around me. And it acts almost like a Pentecost in which the fire of inspiration leaps from person to person. So it's a slow rumble of change over time.
Yeah.
And this idea and the ability to move this energy is something that you know not only through your astrology practice and your skills as a bruja, but also through the lived embodied experience of being a person who was affected by oppression and had to reclaim their power. And this I was getting like big wounded healer vibes, like now that I have developed these tools, let me teach you how to use them. So it's a very liberatory story on all scales here. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah, I love that articulation of it. And I appreciate the reflection. I feel like I love when people take what I say and make a succinct like picture of it. It's so helpful for me because I'm just like trying to articulate it as I go most of the time. Yeah, I mean, and that's a Jewish story, right? That's a gay story. That's a Black story. That's an indigenous. This is like, that's how it's always worked.
Yeah.
Is the individuals being like, no matter what these white men are doing, right? I am a person. Like, you can't take my humanity from me.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the kind of fire, like you're saying, that I'm passionate about. And it kind of like, it's kind of like a smoldering, you know, charcoal underneath the grill, you know? So it's like it's not obvious at first. Like I used to be very more like overtly politically oriented, but it is very, everything to me is politics, you know, everything to me is political. But I used to be more overt about it. And I used to be more like, you know, talking about these things, leading with them. But at least right now in my life, I find it so much more helpful for people to just like, let's get into, sorry if you can hear my cat meowing, I don't know.
She's just cheering in agreement.
She probably has something to say. Now I find it much more helpful to just get to the heart of it, you know, like with people, like, let's get in there. Where you are at, how are you feeling, how are you relating to the world, how is the world impacting you, you know, because it has to come from the inside out.
Yeah.
It's this, there's been an overemphasis, which, you know, has played a very important role in many regards, but there's been an overemphasis due to the academic nature of whiteness in the ideological purity and mm-hmm. ideological understanding. But you can have a beautiful ideological framework for your political and personal, to use those synonyms, freedom, and still be afraid to take action or afraid to believe that something else is possible, you know? And so the world building is very much a question of, do you believe another world is possible? Yes or no? Mm-hmm. No, yes, but no, you know, like yes or no. And underneath that question is another question, which is, do you believe healing is even possible? Yes or no? You know, and I think those are two questions that we don't ask ourselves enough. It's a practice of asking, of checking in with yourself, you know, like, are you being the person who believes healing is possible? Are you being the person who believes another world is possible? And I think that underneath the ideological, you know, puritanical stances that people have made themselves a home in, the answer to those questions is more often than not no. Because when you really believe that a new world or another world is possible, if you really believe healing is possible, then you're not just going in circles around and around and around and around the same thing forever.
Yeah, no, that's it's good to teach people how to fish rather than fish for them, which sounds like a bit what you're talking about by going through the inside and leading it out.
Yeah, I'm the Ron Swanson of world building. I don't know if you watch Parks and Rec.
I do know who you're talking about. I don't know that if he said that, I don't remember, but yes.
Yeah, he says stuff like that, yeah.
It's very, very in line with one of my favorite political theorists. I've brought him up on the podcast before. Paulo Freire and his Pedagogy of the Oppressed, which is like talking about how, you know, colonization and what like upholds a lot of these ideas of whiteness and the purification that comes with it is separating class and education. So it's almost an infantilization to try to be like, okay, little baby, let me teach you how to take care of yourself, rather than saying like, here's how to build a spear and like, here's how to go kill what you need to kill, you know, and letting them go do it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that you use the spear because, you know, so my people are from the Caribbean. Those are warrior people. They're like very gentle, very peaceful, but there's a deep volcanic, like underwater fire to them. And, that is how I feel. Like, I'm like, it's like, you know, to get really existential with it, I'm like, this is war, mm-hmm. you know, like I don't live every day, like tapped into that energy, you know, that's fucking exhausting.
Yeah.
I tried and I fucking burnt out, but like, this is war. And I love that you brought in the pedagogy of the oppressed, because that's what I mean by it's paradigmatic. It's about pedagogy. Like, to me, world building as I'm developing it is a pedagogy. You know, it is a way of thinking and a way of like reclaiming that agency. I mean, I learned this from Grace and Jimmy Boggs, you know, like they were leaders in Detroit who were all about like that education, political education and teaching people to take responsibility and be like, you have to what was it? Grace Lee Boggs said specifically, like, transform yourself to transform the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's very deep to me. And I also love my favorite philosopher is Bayo Komolafe, and he's developing a lot of pedagogy around post-activism and the idea of like moving beyond, again, that stance of opposition into like creating beyond it or creating with it or falling into the crack of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I love these conversations, and it's fascinating to me how common it is for a conversation about world building to turn into a conversation about politics, right? You know, which is always like satisfying to me because that's kind of like how I entered it. But it's interesting how it's like, even without a context for world building, those are the questions that start to come up,
yep.
you know, and that really, that makes it so clear how it needs to be paradigmatic and it needs to be a pedagogy, you know, as much as it is a spiritual sovereignty praxis. But to me, those things are all inseparable, you know, but we are trained to see them as separate, like the spiritual magical power that an individual holds and like a pedagogical paradigmatic approach to life is something that we're always in the practice of marrying.
Yeah.
You know, and weaving together. But in fact, I don't, you know, I think all ideological, you know, clarity or dis-ease is spiritual clarity or spiritual dis-ease.
So that's actually a good segue into the next kind of questions that I wanted to ask, which were how, like, in what ways do you bring astrological knowledge into these world building sessions? And I would also be interested in how your praxis as a bruja fits in as well.
Yeah. So with astrology, I like to keep it really fun. Like astrology is like the playful mirror that I use in session. I don't, you know, I've been an astrologer for 13 years, so it's a fun thing to play with and to bounce off of in session with people, like as needed. I'm not an astrologer, even back when I was, you know, more technical or, you know, still in studies or whatever. Like, I'm not an astrologer who spends a lot of time looking at the chart or delineating the chart. You know, if you want to learn astrology, go to an astrology class. But if you want to like trust a translator, choose an astrologer that you resonate with. And so I really invite people to, you know, take the risk of trusting my translation of the chart and like just bounce off of it. And like, you know, sometimes we'll get into delineation, like more technical delineation, if that feels fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I use that to give, I love using the natal chart as the kind of like giving someone an existential context that's removed from all these other factors that can shape their existential context. So like it's removed from this outer world, you know, like it mirrors it, it describes it, it's absolutely connected to it, but it gives people a touch base with themselves that isn't about any of the identity markers that have been constructed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's really just kind of like an organic identity marker, so to speak. And so I like to use it to give people like somewhere to look for themselves or see themselves that isn't based. That's like so, it's so mystical. You know, we're talking about planets in the sky. And so it really opens people up to this kind of like multidimensional level of thinking about themselves. So that's how I love to incorporate it in. And I like to use natal or astrology transit. So what's happening right now, to give that existential concept of timing, you know, I'm like, yeah, this, you know, this makes sense because of this, you know, and just kind of like, it's very, as kind of like ethereal as astrology is, it's also very grounding, you know, like that's where people are actually into it. And so that'll sometimes come up, you know, just like focusing on different transits in terms of like, I don't like to be like, you're probably experiencing XYZ right now because this transit is happening. I like to listen to what they're saying and be like, that makes sense because,
okay.
You know, so it's more of a call and response affirmative thing than a like, I'm going to tell you something that may or may not be fully accurate. I like efficiency above all else. So why waste my time trying to delineate your life when you could just tell me about it? And then I could be like, yeah, and here's a way to think about that, you know? And then as far as like being a shaman, that really comes up when people's ancestors come through or when there's like energetic healing that needs to be done. So it's very spontaneous. It doesn't always show up. It doesn't happen every session. You know, it's very spontaneous, but there will be times when deep shit or dark shit comes up. And that's when my tools and techniques as a shaman come in because, you know, to me, that's all about moving energy, diffusing energy, restoring energy, like whatever's needed. And so when people's ancestors come through, or ancestral trauma, or, you know, just their own lived experience trauma comes up, that's when my energetic skills as a bruje come in, because I have a context for working with that, and I have experience working with that. And so I'm able to support them in that moment, and in either, like, I don't know, it feels presumptuous to say releasing it, because that's like it can be an ongoing thing depending on the energetic knot. Some energetic knots are really resolved in the moment. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's come with time and as I've accumulated skill. And other knots are kind of like, some of the tension around the knot is diffused, but the knot is still there, you know. And so, yeah, that's a really beautiful honor that I have in working with people when it does come up. I feel very grateful for my experiences and my background and my trainings and my initiations and all of that, because I feel so well equipped to do this work in the way that I would want to do it, and to do it in a way that is really impactful and isn't surface level. Like, we can really go as deep as you fucking want into it, and I'm not going to drop you. I'm not going to not be able to, you know, catch you. I'm not going to, like, not be able to hold your hand through it. And so, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know if that answers your question specifically enough.
No, it does. I guess my follow-up question to the way that you use your skills as a shaman would be, do people tend to have these, like, ancestral or, like, haunting blockages towards their ability to energetically create a more sovereign reality? And, like, that's why it comes up as you're exploring their dream self?
1,000,000%. And that's part of the design of colonialism, not as a economic strategy, but as a spiritual and energetic strategy, is to impact the lineage and control the lineage and suppress the lineage and the medicine that those people carry. And, you know, which is, we all carry world-creating medicine, and each lineage carries that world-creating medicine in a specific way, in a specific texture and style. And so, you know, I personally see it as a project of colonialism on a spiritual level to try to, like, snuff out that light and snuff out that power, because that's how you are able to successfully control people and extract from them and exploit them. If people are connected to their world-creating power, not just as individuals, but in a way that is connected to a lineage, mm-hmm. a long ancestry of world creators, you know, then they're going to be impossible to oppress. And so ancestral stuff often comes up in people's belief or ability to connect to their world creating power, because, you know, to hurt humans is to hurt the earth, and to hurt the earth is to hurt humans, because in my cosmology, we're not separate. And so, you know, that each lineage carries their own wounding around the world creating power and world building in different ways. You know, if the identity being held is that of the oppressor, let's say, then that's a wound of severance. And if the identity being held in the moment is that of the oppressed, then that's a wound of severance. It's all the same wound, but just, in my opinion, like, expressing itself in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all, to me, it's all ancestral in terms of how the non-three-dimensional reality makes itself actualized in the dimensional, three-dimensional reality, because our physical bodies and our incarnation into this dimension, onto this planet, ties us automatically into a bloodstream, into a bloodline, into a lineage. And that's the only reason we're able to exist, right? Other than that, we, like, who knows? Everyone has their own ideas about, you know, where we are before we're incarnated. And so, of course, the minute you're incarnated, you're tied into this bloodstream and the stories of that bloodstream, and that bloodstream's relationship to bringing dreams into reality, bringing the non-tangible into the tangible, bringing the spiritual into the practical.
So it's an entirely liberating process, not just for the dead, but for the living, in a way that reapplies medicine to the life-giving blood force, which I love. That's beautiful.
Exactly.
There's so much a liberatory quality to what you're talking about here. I'm just wondering, like, did you have any spirit guides, like, give you some nudges or, like, say this is the best way for you to move the pedagogy and praxis that you want to bring to the world? Like, did you find that the whole world building catalog was co-creative between you and your spirits, or did you go to them and say, I have this idea, let's make it happen? Or
that's a great question. So the way that my spiritual field works, there isn't a lot of verbal conversation. It's very like, I just get kind of like struck, you know, I just get like, things could just get dropped into my head. And mm-hmm. sometimes I don't even know who it is, you know, like I have a mm-hmm. few identifiable characters in my spiritual field, but not a lot. I get overwhelmed with too much noise. And like, I feel like they know that at this point. we kind of, you know, struck a bargain. I'm like, if we're going to like do this thing, if we're going to have a relationship, like I need it to be like plain and simple, because I can't, you know, I just get too overwhelmed and too spongy. So, you know, when it comes to world building and the frameworks that I've been developing around it, I have to 1,000,000% shout out the planetary ancestors and like working with them as guides, working with them as leaders, working with them as teachers and mentors. Like, they have been at the front helm of world building, kind of like emerging into my consciousness as a term. You know, it's what I've been doing, but like as a term and like as the kind of like linguistic positioning and the way that linguistics create reality. And so, you know, I feel like now I had to name them all individually. So like the moon, Mercury, Venus, the sun, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, and then also Uranus, Neptune, and Pluto. I feel like they've really been guiding my hands in this. And of course, my own ancestors and my own like animal connections to an extent. I do feel like sometimes what sustains me spiritually personally is a little different than what sustains me spiritually in my work. Not that there's, you know, I don't see like a demarcation necessarily, but the planets show up very heavily in my work, and like my animal relationships show up very heavily in my like personal emotional transmutation, which obviously allows the work to exist. So yeah, the planets are really at the forefront of this, which is how World Building School came to be. Like, World Building School is about getting to know the planetary ancestors through the lens of world building, through asking them questions and engaging with them as world building teachers.
Oh, I love that. I mean, they do build our world through the projections mm-hmm. of their energetic fields. So those would, of course, be amazing tutelary spirits to ask these kinds of questions to. So then in the same vein of the like natural law of nature, is that how you were referring to it earlier? Did I term it right?
Natural law.
Natural law. In that same vein, there wouldn't be any world that the planets, you know, would create that isn't already a perfect expression of nature. I maybe am about to like ask a hard philosophical question, but like, how do you, I always feel like I'm about to like ask you to solve the problem of evil. Do you theology, philosophy 101, solve evil right now. Why? But no, but all jokes aside,
I've been preparing my whole life for this.
How do you, I mean, I truly believe what you're putting down about like each of our true selves is a perfected self. Our true desires are worth being chased because that's a true reflection of the way that I am mirroring the all being. There are a million different people who have within even Kabbalah, the framework that I use, who have tried to solve this problem through like, well, it's the klipoth, it's the empty shells, it's the, you know, the moon is cursed. I've heard that one in a bunch of different mythologies. Oh, well, the moon is cursed. And so the reflection that we all see is now like tainted and we need to do rectification to clear it. You know, I'm just wondering, like, where is your cosmological stance here? It seems like it would be important in the work that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. This is a great question because I, in general, but also I've been thinking about it a little more than usual because I'm watching Succession, which I really don't understand this is a show. It's so terrible.
I literally was just told I need to watch that show. Is it really
that bad? If you want to contemplate, it's obviously, well, it's like funny because it's so good, right? Because it's like won so many awards. It's like the acting is A++. The content of the show is very, very much positing the questions. What is evil? Where does it come from?
That's honestly probably why it was recommended to me. I'll probably like it.
Yeah. Very malefic show. So I'm so blessed and fortunate to have been and continue to be a mentee of Samia Abu Samra and EJ Nididu Ude, who run the Turtle Tank Freedom School that I'm in, have been in for the last 6 years. They have taught me what I know about natural law and about Ifa and about how reality works and all these very like existential questions as well. And so, and they're very much about that sovereignty, right? So like in my own journey of like trying to solve the problem of evil right now on Friday, June 16th, 2023 at 4:02 p.m. Eastern. On the east coast of Turtle Island, I feel like what I understand to be true about evil or to be evil is like, to be a Jew and answer a question with a question is like, what is evil? You know, like there's like all of our conversations about things are so founded on a binary of something, right? Good and evil. Right, positive, negative, supportive, challenging, healthy, unhealthy. And those, obviously, binaries exist for a reason. I think every polarity is an entryway into a spectrum. But I'm curious about this, like, one way that the Christians and, like, I think, you know, even in certain sects in Judaism address it is kind of this trickstery question where they're like, well, if God created everything, then God also created the devil. You know, so then what is true about like the purpose of evil? Mm-hmm. And so I see some levels of evil as trickster, you know, like, because I think there's levels to it, right? There's a spectrum, you know, like it's a little quote unquote evil that like my one cat will slap my other cat in the face, you know, when she's not even doing anything, right? Like that. There's like this kind of like more petty levels of evil. And then there's like, you know, genocidal levels of evil. And so I find myself curious about the role that the trickster plays in all of it. And, you know, as it's often talked about, especially in occult traditions, like this dance between light and shadow, right? And like, you know, day and night, diurnal, nocturnal, internal, external, and this whole like polarity thing. And so I don't know. I feel like as mammals, as like beings, the first and foremost priority in the question of evil is to support the people experiencing it in soothing and regulation, right? That's basically what trauma care is, right? Trauma is like something evil or terrible happened, and I need to recover. And then I think in the question of like embodiments of evil, you know, like, I don't know. As a shaman, I start thinking about possession. I start thinking about entities that aren't tied to this planet per se. But then I'm like, what do we know about this planet? What do we know about entities that are tied to this planet? What do we know about possession? What do we know about humans? Is it really possession? Or are humans really just capable of that? You know, I don't know. But in a general sense, if we're not looking at the most extreme end of the spectrum of evil, I tend to orient a little more towards thinking of it as the trickster, you know. And then, of course, for me, as a human being, there are places where it crosses the line. I'm like, that's just unfathomable, unconscionable, unbelievable. I don't even understand how that happens or how that exists. I don't know. Obviously, this is a ramble response, but this is me trying to solve the fucking problem of evil. It's tricky. I think it's it's so contextual, you know? I grew up with a man that I would classify as having a lot of evil embodiment and evil I think evil embodiment covers it. And so in growing up in that environment, I have a lot of intimacy with evil and cruelty and the intentionality of it. And so much of it seems to stem from pain. And when it doesn't stem from pain, it seems to stem from a literal biological misalignment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I find it very fascinating, because I think there's a level of evil that is absolutely very spiritual and has me thinking about possession and has me thinking about off-planet entities and frequencies. But I think there's a large portion of it that is humans in pain or humans with a biological malfunction that hasn't been supported. My grandmother also had a lot of evil embodiment, but also at the same time was this incredibly spiritually powerful person. And that's what we see with a lot of evil, right? They're just these huge powerhouses who took the world by storm, usually in a negative way, right? But they still somehow got that influence. They still somehow got that power. And so it makes me curious about the relationship between a destabilization of the individual system because of the level of energy that they're capable of transmitting through their system. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting question. I sometimes ask, are, you know, non-human, non-embodied spirits influencing some of this, dis-ease in people that creates that level of, you know, disharmony in their conduct? But one thing that I really liked about what you said is that the implication seemed to be that, you know, if that is caused by people being in pain, and what your world building is meant to do is transmute that pain and put people back in line with their sense of agency and sovereignty in the world, then through doing that energetic work of untangling those knots, we're not calling something good or evil. We are calling it ease or dis-ease, and the consequences of energy reproduction when a human feels one versus the other. And I think that's a beautiful antinomian ethos to carry forward that kind of steps us out of this patriarchal colonization terminology that really comes from Christianity of you are either good or bad, which is really not something that humans ethically carried forward with such finality as they have since the Roman Empire. So it's another rewriting.
Because so many indigenous practices are, you know, like in Ifa, it's like, oh, you're not evil, you're hurting.
Exactly.
You know, or you're not evil, you're possessed, you know? So mm-hmm. I love to leave a little room for the possession. You know, I personally, it's hard because I'm like, you know, I think that's real. I think that happens. I think that's happening. But I don't like to be like formulaic about it and be like, and here's exactly how it works or how it happened. You know, like, I don't fucking know. It's like, some people might seem possessed and maybe they're not. And some people don't seem it and they definitely are. So, you know, it's like, that's like a little different level of skill and experience to start making judgments about. But I think in the places before the line is crossed, you know, which is where we get to like genocide and Holocaust and like all of those things that are just truly just a mind fuck. Like, that's where I'm like, that doesn't seem human.
Probably, you know, possession.
Yeah, I'm like, probably possession. Because what I always think of, and maybe it's naive, is like, I always think of babies. I'm like, you look at a baby and you're not like, oh, this one's definitely the worst. Throw it out. You know, like, you're like all babies share in common that they're just like angelic in some sense, you know, and they're just like, you know, some people talk about small children who are clearly like disturbed, you know, and I'm just like, but they weren't like that when they were 0 days old, you know, like something happened. And so, yeah, I don't know. I think the trauma is a place where the, let's say, malevolent entities can enter in.
I would absolutely agree with that. Yes, 100%. No, I loved that answer. Well, this has been such a
we're going to end on the question of evil.
No, actually, I always have one last question. I always have one last question. It's the
same. In case it gets too dark.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this is Saturn Vox. I can get us as dark as I want over here. That's my world building.
I'm here for it.
But I always like to end on the same last question, and it's actually giving sovereignty over to you. I like to end the interview on really just handing you the mic and saying, like, whatever you want to say, whatever you feel like, exactly, whatever you feel like needs to be said that you would be remiss if our listeners didn't hear before, you know, we move. Did you want to like read a poem or make one final comment or whatever you want to do? It's completely up to you. So I'm just going to throw it over to you now for that one.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I love that. I'm going to end on the prayer for world builders that I co-created with the world builders who attended How to Build Your Dream World 2.0.
Oh my gosh. I love this.
Let me just find it.
Yeah, take your time. Yeah,
it's really beautiful. It was very iterative. It was kind of like popcorn style, you know, just like everyone add a sentence to it.
That's one of my favorite ways to build a poem collaboratively.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so a prayer for world builders. May you live in a world where you're able to dream. May you live in a world you are able to love. May you live in a world where you're able to expand within your brightest container. May you live in a world where you receive as much love as you give. May you live in a world where you find yourself as both microcosm and macrocosm and wonder endlessly at the mysteries. May you allow yourself to live in a world where you don't have to make sense. May you feel the wet earth on your hands and know that you are God. Created by Ari Felitz, Agatha Salvatierra, Avery Fawcett, Diana Rose Harper, Michelle Siuk, Lena Rubin, and Elk O. Dubure on 9/10/2022.
Oof. May it be so.
Ashe, and so it is.
So beautiful. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing that and sharing all of this beautiful contemplative wisdom. I especially enjoyed the liberatory quality of the message that you were bringing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this invitation. I'm glad that we got to chat and solve the problems of good and evil and the future of the planet
always together. Always a fun time on Saturn Vox.
Thank you so much.